Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This episode is sponsored in part by Cedar Lane Stables. Cedar Lane Stables is run by Katie Peterson, who does horse training and riding lessons in the Southwest Michigan area. Katie can be reached at 269-240-7182.
They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated. Welcome back, listeners, to Crashing the Parties. My name is Asia.
My name is Bailey.
My name is Colton.
In our first episode, we established the problem with our political landscape, an incredible amount of discourse and hate between the two parties. In the second episode, we looked into how this hate benefits the people in power. But this hate is also the reason these people got elected into these positions of power.
It all comes down to the elections. If a party knows they can get more votes by saying they support or are going to do something, they will campaign on this. Typically, there isn't a lot of follow-through on these promises. The hatred and divide in our country is allowing these false promises to be made and campaigned on. The issue these lies are about are typically very controversial that deserve to be solved regardless of the difficulty to do so. Abortion, gun control, and immigration are just a few of these issues.
Immigration has been an issue our country has faced for decades, and the number of people being arrested for illegally crossing the border has reached record-breaking levels this year. The security across the U.S. and Mexico border is not ideal, with smuggling, human trafficking, and criminal activity riddling the area, making it incredibly unsafe for law enforcement and citizens alike. But during those years, both parties have promised to try and fix the border during the presidential campaign. Yet, nothing has changed. The same issues are still going on. They're using immigration as a political weapon, and people are suffering because of it.
During the 2012 presidential campaign, the Obama administration had an extremely high number of deportations that year, which resulted in Obama being called the deporter-in-chief by immigration advocates. This caused a large disillusionment among the Latino voters that felt the administration failed to deliver on its 2008 promise of comprehensive immigration reform. On June 15, 2012, the administration announced the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, a policy that gave relief from deportation and work permits to undocumented immigrants that were brought to the U.S. as children, called Dreamers. This program resonated among many Latino and immigrant groups and immediately shifted the narrative to the community before his election.
The DACA announcement made a sharp contrast between Obama and Mitt Romney. Romney had taken a hard stance on immigration and suggested that unauthorized immigrants should leave the country voluntarily. It was not a plan for massive roundups, but a strategy to make life very difficult for unauthorized immigrants by mandating E-Verify, a confirmation system of an employee's information defined within the millions of government records, an increasing reinforcement for the border. By this stance, he would hope that they choose to leave the country voluntarily. This is a clear appeal to voters that want to prioritize border security and the rule of law. That allowed him to differentiate himself from opponents who favored a path of legalization. But it was criticized by Democrats and some Republicans as being unrealistic and punishing policy.
Later, during the 2016 presidential campaign, Donald Trump made immigration the central idea of his campaign. His approach and strategy was very aggressive, polarizing symbolism, and a promise to immediate policy change. Trump associated immigrants with crime by using very controversial language, stating that immigrants from Mexico were bringing in drugs, they're bringing in crime, they're rapists.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting. And it only makes common sense. It only makes common sense. They're sending us not the right people. It's coming from more than Mexico. It's coming from all over South and Latin America, and it's coming probably from the Middle East. But we don't know, because we have no protection, and we have no competence. We don't know what's happening. And it's got to stop. And it's got to stop fast.
This framed immigration as immediate threat to personal safety to citizens. Also, Trump pledged to build the wall on the U.S.-Mexico border and to restore control and sovereignty to the nation's borders. This promise became the ultimate symbol of his campaign. Finally, Trump targeted specific groups of people by proposing a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States, linking immigration to terrorism and national security, which stroked fear and cultural anxiety among other voters.
Trump's aggressive and rhetoric campaign was the complete opposite of Hillary Clinton's. Her campaign strategy was to aim at the Democratic voters, particularly the Latino community and immigrant advocacy groups. But by doing so, it framed debate around reforming, compassion, and American values. The way Clinton used immigration as a political weapon highlighted the extreme nature of Trump's proposals, such as mass deportation and the border wall. She also appealed directly to voters, seeking permanent solutions for immigrants living in the U.S. without authorization, by promising a pathway to citizenship within her first 100 days in office. She also appealed directly to the voters seeking permanent solutions for immigrants living in the U.S. without authorization, by promising a pathway to citizenship within her first 100 days in office, and by vowing to defend and expand President Obama's DACA policies. Finally, she wanted to focus on humanitarian aid and family values. She empathized with the emotional cost of enforcement practices, appealing to voters' sense of fairness and compassion. She pledged to end family detention for parents and children in closed private immigration centers, and to focus enforcement resources on deporting individuals who pose a violent threat to public safety, as well as scaling back on large raids that, quote, tear families apart. While Trump's campaign used immigration to make voters concerned about security and border control, Clinton used it to mobilize voters who prioritized a moral and economic solution that included legal status for millions of immigrants already in the U.S.
During the following election in 2020, Trump was back for re-elections and continued to use immigration as a central political campaign. After using persuasive language and policies aimed towards boosting his political stance and blaming the issue on terms of national security and border protection, he continued to campaign heavily on the issue of border security and reiterate the need for building and completing the wall on the U.S. political border. Also, the Trump administration maintained and expanded a number of hardline enforcement policies like the Migrant Protection Protocols Act, also known as Remain in Mexico. This required different asylum seekers to wait in Mexico for their U.S. court dates and the implementation of expedited removal policies. Also, the administration took actions to restrict avenues for legal immigration and temporary visas that recited the needs to protect American jobs and national security. But during April 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic and economic concerns caused Trump to issue a proclamation that temporarily suspended the entry of certain immigrants seeking green cards.
During all of that, the Trump administration continued to reduce the cap for refugee administrations. Also, during 2020, the public charge rule made it more difficult for immigrants who may use public assistance programs to obtain permanent residency. His campaign was very persuasive. It often emphasized the link between unauthorized immigration and crime together, which characterized immigrants as terrorists and led to the threat of personal safety to the U.S. citizens. His strategy involved a combination of aggressive policy actions and high persuasion to mobilize support among voters prioritizing border control and restricted immigration.
On the other hand, Joe Biden's campaign used immigration as a political issue by primarily framing it as contrast to the policies and principles of the Trump administration. His approach centered on promising to restore what he characterized as a more humane, orderly, and lawful immigration system. This strategy was designed to appeal to a large range of voters, including those who support immigration reform and those who oppose the Trump administration's policies. Biden's campaign focused heavily on undoing what his supporters considered to be the most controversial and damaging Trump-era policies. They wanted to end the Muslim ban by banning any type of travel that targeted citizens from several main Muslim and African countries, terminating border policies such as the MPP, also known as the Migrant Protection Protocols, as well as protecting the DACA program that provides protection from deportation for unauthorized immigrants brought into the U.S. as a child.
Biden wanted to start the conversation of the root causes of migration in Central American countries. This strategy included $4 million for aid to address issues like gangs and gender-based violence, corruption, and lack of economic opportunity. He wanted to advocate for a more humane and efficient asylum system by restoring asylum seekers to present their cases at the border and provide necessary resources to process applications fairly. Overall, Biden used immigration as a political weapon to paint a clear line of distinction in his vision of an inclusive and welcoming side of America rather than being harsh and inclusive of others.
Finally, in the latest election in 2024, Trump used immigration as a central political issue in the 2024 election campaign by proposing a set of policies focused on strict enforcement and significant reduction in the immigrant population. His strategy for this campaign is centered on framing the situation at the southern border as a national crisis that threatened this country's security, economy, and social cohesion. This aimed at mobilizing his base and drawing a sharp contrast within the policies of the previous administration. Trump's most predominant feature of his campaign is his immigration platform. This was a pledge to start the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. Trump frequently used very strong language to link immigration to crime and national threats, and often repeated claims that were disproved by existing data and studies, like immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country, in his campaign speeches.
Continuing on, these proposed policies went beyond border enforcement to end or restrict legal and humanitarian immigration systems. One example is the birthright citizenship, which he promised to sign an executive order to end. Birthright citizenship is a constitutional guarantee of citizenship for children born in the United States. He had a plan to redirect federal resources towards immigration enforcement by reassigning federal agents from other agencies and putting pressure on sanctuary cities by withholding federal funding. By centering his campaign on an enforcement-only approach and using strong language to emphasize border security, he made immigration one of the biggest debated issues of the 2024 election.
Democrats, on the other hand, had Kamala Harris. She used immigration as a key political issue by adopting a strategy focused on emphasizing both border enforcement and comprehensive reform, while directly attacking her opponent's policies. Her approach was designed to address voter concerns about the southern border while upholding democratic values of humane treatment and pathways to citizenship. Harris repeatedly emphasized her commitment to passing the bipartisan Senate border security bill that had failed earlier in 2024. She used this bill as a political tool by blaming the opposition, framing her opponent Donald Trump as the reason why the border was not secured, stating that he tanked the bill for political reasons, while also shifting her policies towards the middle of the political spectrum, supporting provisions in the bill that would have added more Border Patrol agents, immigration judges, detention beds, and raising the bar for asylum claims, which demonstrated a commitment to stricter enforcement and orderly process.
Harris drew a clear contrast between her vision and Trump's proposals, mostly his plans for mass deportations. The Pathway to Citizenship Act is a great example of this, because Harris promised to work with Congress to create an earned pathway to citizenship for long-time undocumented immigrants, which appealed to the progressive wing of her party, immigrant communities, and advocacy groups. She also wanted to recognize the public concern over high numbers of irregular border crossings. She shifted her public views and wanted to prioritize orderly and lawful migration by enforcement language, stating that the U.S. is a sovereign nation that has a duty to set rules at a border and enforce them.
So, Arizona, I think you all know, and this is why you are here, there are consequential issues at stake in this election. And one is the security of our border. The United States is a sovereign nation. And I believe we have a duty to set rules at our border and to enforce them. And I take that responsibility very seriously. We are also a nation of immigrants. The United States has been enriched by generations of people who have come from every corner of the world to contribute to our country and to become part of the American story. And so we must reform our immigration system to ensure that it works in an orderly way, that it is humane, and that it makes our country stronger.
With border management, she proposed increasing the number of Border Patrol agents, asylum officers, and immigration judges to speed up case processing, which would have then reduced the backlog and made the system more efficient. By combining the promises of a pathway to citizenship with support for strict border enforcement measures, Harris wanted to neutralize the issue as an attack point rather than be a contrast between her approach to the issue. Overall, Harris was playing on both sides of the fence, pretending to care for the Democrats and Republicans.
Immigration being used as political power and placing blame on each other isn't going to fix the issue. It is one of the most debated issues to this day. But acting like children and blaming each other for the safety of this country is mind-blowing behavior. We are trapped in a divide where both sides are so busy arguing that they lost sight of the bigger picture. We should step back and try and resolve this issue for the well-being of our people and those wishing to immigrate to the United States.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Gun control in the United States is one of the most divisive political issues today, shaped by opposing beliefs, decades of debate, and different ideas about safety, rights, and the Constitution.
Republicans generally argue that the Second Amendment is a fundamental right that should not be weakened by new federal gun restrictions. They usually focus on protecting the rights of responsible gun owners, supporting self-defense, and enforcing the laws that already exist instead of creating new bans. For many conservatives, gun rights are about personal freedom and preventing the government from overstepping its limits. Instead of wide-reach restrictions, they tend to support better mental health services, stronger policing of illegal gun activity, and tougher penalties for criminals, not additional rules that affect law-abiding citizens.
Democrats, on the other hand, usually see gun violence as a major public health problem and believe stronger gun safety laws are needed to reduce shootings. Their political positions often include universal background checks, so nearly every gun sale requires one, or renewed bans on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, red flag laws that allow temporarily removing guns from dangerous individuals, stricter safe storage rules, and changing liability protections that shield gun manufacturers. These are not just ideas. Many of these proposals are written into Democratic policy platforms and supported by gun control advocacy groups.
Throughout U.S. history, some of these goals have actually turned into laws, where others have failed. One of the biggest federal laws was the 1994 Federal Assault Weapons Ban. It banned certain semi-automatic firearms and high-capacity magazines for 10 years, until it expired in 2004 because Congress didn't renew it. Even though researchers disagree about how effective it was, it still stands out as a major moment in the gun legislation. Another key law was the 1993 Brandy Handgun Violence Prevention Act, which set up the National Background Check System, NICS, and made background checks a regular part of buying a gun from licensed dealers. While it didn't go as far as many gun control advocates hoped, it permanently changed the way gun purchases work in the U.S.
After those laws, not much changed on the federal level for years, until 2022. President Joe Biden signed the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, the biggest gun safety law in decades. It expanded background checks for buyers under 21, required more gun sellers to be federally licensed, meaning more sales needed background checks, and funded state red flag programs, as well as invested mental health resources and school safety. According to federal reports, the law also increased penalties for gun trafficking and straw purchases, which helped close some loopholes that allowed people to avoid background checks. By early 2024, the White House said the law had already stopped hundreds of gun purchases by people under 21, suggesting it was having a noticeable impact.
Even so, many gun control supporters argued that the new law didn't go far enough. It didn't bring back the federal assault weapons ban, and it didn't completely close background check loopholes like private online sales or some gun show transactions. Major Democratic priorities, like a full assault weapons ban or universal background checks, still had no path through Congress. Many of the biggest reforms that gun safety groups wanted remained out of reach, even with a president who strongly supported them.
Presidential involvement shows just how difficult it is to turn gun control promises into actual results. After the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting, President Barack Obama pushed hard for common sense gun reforms, including universal background checks and a renewed assault weapons ban. He signed 23 executive actions on gun violence, but most of his major goals failed in Congress. Even the Manchin-Toomey Amendment, a bipartisan proposal to expand background checks, didn't get enough votes into the Senate. Obama later said that the failure to pass these laws was one of the most frustrating moments of his presidency.
If you ask me where has been the one area where I feel that I've been most frustrated and most stymied, it is the fact that the United States of America is the one advanced nation on earth in which we do not have sufficient common sense gun safety laws, even in the face of repeated mass killings. And, you know, if you look at the number of Americans killed since 9/11 by terrorism, it's less than 100. If you look at the number that have been killed by gun violence, it's in the tens of thousands. And for us not to be able to resolve that issue has been something that is distressing, but it is not something that I intend to stop working on in the remaining.
President Biden has faced similar challenges. He campaigned on banning assault weapons, expanding background checks, supporting red flag laws, and even encouraging new gun safety technology like fingerprint-locked firearms. Once in office, he followed through on many actions he could take without congressional approval, one of those actions being the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. He issued executive orders to support stronger enforcement, pushed the Justice Department to require more sellers to be licensed, and created the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Still, many of his biggest promises, such as national assault weapons bans and repealing legal gun protections for gun manufacturers, have been blocked by the current political divide.
There has also been major resistance from states. In 2024, over two dozen Republican-led states sued the Justice Department to stop a rule that would make more gun sellers run background checks. This shows that even when presidents try to make changes through executive actions or federal rules, states can still push back and slow down the process.
The political situation becomes even more complicated when looking at how lawmakers respond to mass shootings. A recent academic study from 2025 found that mass shootings do not consistently influence how state legislators vote on gun laws. Even after major tragedies, there's often no clear political shift towards stricter gun regulations. This highlights how polarization, strong lobbying groups like the National Rifle Association, or NRA, and long-term political patterns make it extremely difficult to pass big changes, even when public attention is high.
Overall, the Republican approach focuses on protecting constitutional rights, emphasizing law enforcement and mental health solutions instead of new legislative restrictions. Democrats focus on expanding gun regulation, closing loopholes, improving background checks, and supporting new safety measures. While there have been important laws such as the Brady Act, the 1994 assault weapons ban, and especially the 2022 Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, many Democratic proposals still haven't become law. Presidents like Obama and Biden have tried to use both Congress and executive power to address gun violence, but political gridlock and strong opposition often limit what they can accomplish. Meanwhile, states and courts continue to challenge new regulations, showing how divided and complicated gun control politics remain in the United States.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
While it is a very controversial issue, abortion isn't exactly a new issue. Going back to even before the United States was the United States, women here were having abortions. The British colonies allowed abortions until what they called the quickening stage, which is when a pregnant person can feel the fetus moving, usually around 4 to 5 months. After that stage, colonial women were not allowed to get abortions.
In the 1820s, our country saw its first legal attacks on abortion rights. These laws varied from state to state and typically had the intention of protecting pregnant people. Most of these laws attacked the poisons used to perform abortions and not the abortions themselves.
Then, in 1973, our country had a huge turning point for abortion rights. Roe v. Wade was passed, removing all previously existing criminal abortion laws. The court ruled that the decision to have an abortion was the individual carrying the fetus's choice, and not the state or the government's. However, it did restrict that the termination must take place during the first trimester. The decision to terminate a pregnancy was left up for the pregnant person, in consultation with the doctor.
States may also add additional rules, many regulating abortions in the third or second trimester, with the only exception being for the health issues that pose a threat to the pregnant person. As of 2025, 12 states have banned abortions completely. Alabama, Arkansas, Idaho, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, and West Virginia all have complete abortion bans. A majority of these states are red states or a majority Republican states.
If an individual lives in a state that is under an abortion ban, they are allowed to travel to a state where abortions are legal. However, some of these states are landlocked by abortion bans, meaning someone seeking an abortion would have to travel multiple states to get to a place where it is legal to receive. On top of that taking a considerable amount of time, it also adds a higher price in gas or plane tickets, making the cost of an abortion even more expensive than it already is. Finances are a huge restriction for some people seeking abortions, and even in the states that abortion is legal, it's not always covered by health insurance.
On top of the bans, some lawmakers are proposing to introduce a new bill that not only threatens abortion rights, but threatens the individuals seeking abortions. 10 states have proposed this law that would make it legal to charge people getting abortions with homicide. This is a terrifying thought to some. In fact, a 2024 poll from PBS shows that 84% of Americans do not agree with these laws.
With abortion being a complex and countrywide issue, it is often a huge turning point for elections. In 2024, 1 in 8 voters reported that the issue influencing their vote the most was abortion rights. Both parties are aware of how influential abortion is and have taken the opposing stances. The Democratic Party pushes for the right to abortion to be nationwide, while the Republican Party is a mix of allowing the states to choose and nationwide bans. However, the party once again improperly represents those who believe they follow it. 43% of Republicans believe abortion should be legal in all or some cases. The same 43% also does not think a differing opinion on abortion is a big enough issue to switch the vote.
However, the Republicans who support abortion bans are so rooted in their opinion that it is something they would stop supporting the party over. Some of the elected Republican officials don't even believe the things their party stands for. Take Donald Trump, for example. In 1999, Donald Trump stated that he was very pro-choice, and while he had moral personal conflicts with abortion, he still believed in a woman's right to choose. In fact, up until 2015, he supported Planned Parenthood, stating he thought they did a lot of good things for women.
Then, in 2016, when he was running for the Republican Party, his stance changed to the complete opposite. He began to say he supported punishment for those seeking abortions, defunding Planned Parenthood, and to appoint the number of justices required to overturn Roe v. Wade. It brings up a scary question. Is Trump actually against abortion, or does he just know that saying things he doesn't believe will give him the necessary votes? There could also have been pressure applied to him by the Republican Party to change his policies.
While it's true that people can change their opinions over time, the idea of parties forcing their politicians to agree with their policies is a real concern. This is one of the many issues with the two parties. We have these two groups that support completely opposite things, and those who want to be elected as president essentially have to conform to their party.
This means the officials we elect might not actually be passionate about the things they say they are. This is concerning because not only is it an outright lie on their part, but also misrepresents the people who agree with what the politicians actually think, not just the agenda their party is pushing. A politician who isn't actually passionate about an issue isn't going to put their all into solving it, and will just follow their party's agenda instead of the voters' hopes. The people of our country deserve to vote for officials who actually support their beliefs, not just a person who is trying to win an election.
Aside from the morals, the people believe in not being fought for by their party. Partisan politics might be failing the entire country by using the American people as straight-up pawns in their elections. In early November 2025, the government came out of a 43-day long shutdown. A government shutdown happens when the parties cannot agree on a spending bill. This bill literally decides the budget of the government that year, and can often include things like defunding certain organizations or adding funding to different parts of the government. This happens often, but it's a little different this time.
First of all, this is the longest shutdown in our country's history. What we saw was that many Americans' daily lives were being impacted. During the shutdown, many citizens lost their SNAP benefits or food stamps. Not to mention all the federal employees were not getting paid. As a result, national parks closed and flights were harder to get. On top of that, these employees were expected to continue work without pay, which is incredibly inconvenient and even has forced some to get other temporary jobs until they were paid for the labor again.
Both political parties are blaming this on the other person. The Republican Party has adopted the agenda that the Democratic Party is being ridiculous and trying to give healthcare to illegal immigrants. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party said Republicans were pushing far-right agendas through the budget.
This is the complete opposite of what happened in the 2018 shutdown. In 2018, the Republicans were keeping the government shut down, demanding money for the U.S.-Mexico border wall to be built, and the Democrats were claiming it was inhumane and wrong. However, now, they were once again doing nothing to stop what they claim was wrong.
Both parties have set themselves up to have an amazing opportunity to blame the other party for this mistreatment of citizens onto the other parties into the next election. While it's not certain they will do this, most people share this theory. It's actually already happening. If you go to the White House website, a website currently run by the Trump administration, the Democrats are being painted as evil for not signing this budget bill. Neither party has pursued a hard solution, but at this point it's just selfish. Neither party would agree or sacrifice a couple things to open the government back up. It truly shows how selfish the U.S. government is.
While issues like immigration, gun control, and reproductive rights constantly dominate the headlines, it often feels like both parties are more interested in using these topics for campaign leverage than actually fixing them. Instead of working toward a solution, they seem to use these high-stake debates as political tools to rally their bases. This persistent gridlock means we aren't seeing any real progress, which is honestly disappointing to watch when so much is at stake.
As a country, we need to take a step back and look at the issues we are causing for our citizens. The problems that politics are creating are so extreme it threatens the very foundation of our democracy. And with news sources creating different narratives to appeal to the network's political beliefs rather than reporting the truth, it's making the American people guess where the truth actually lies.
As we end the first three episodes, we've examined how partisan politics creates a huge divide in our country from a broad perspective. But as we journey into the next three episodes, we are going to do a deep dive into three specific incidents and apply these concepts to real-world examples. Thank you for listening to Crashing the Parties. I'm Asia.
I'm Colton.
And I'm Bailey.
Underestimated, Crashing the Parties was researched, written, and produced by Colton, Asia, and Bailey. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Colton. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping to fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.